It's time to play like a Jet
with your host, Scott Mason.
Play like a Jet. What does that mean?
Drops the throw, steps up, floats a bomb up the right seam, looking for Anderson. He's got it. They're not going to catch him. He's going to go the distance. Touchdown. Sam Darnold dials it up to Robbie Anderson. 92 yards.
Anderson, too much deflected.
Bell into the middle of that line, and it's a touchdown.
Big return for Crowder, 85 yards.
Pass thrown, there was contact with the quarterback, and it's incomplete. They got pressure on Prescott. It was Adams who came blitzing in.
Hill hit immediately when he got the handoff.
You know who that's?
The Q-inator.
Oh my gosh.
Listen, thank you.
From the TOJ Digital Studios, this is Play Like a Jet. My name is Scott Mason. You can follow me on Twitter at PlayLikeAJet1. And I'm joined for the roundtable by the man that I refer to as the godfather of Jets podcast. He is also the co-host of There's Always Next Year here on the Play Like a Jet feed and Turn on the Jets Digital. One of my favorite people to talk to about not just the Jets, but everything, including the Adam Carolla podcast, which is what we were just talking about before I hit record. Mr. Brian Bassett. Brian, what's going on, sir?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me on the roundtable. Love it.
I got to ask you a question before we start talking about the Jets. So before the Super Bowl on Sunday, you texted me a picture of the Virginia Distillery. Now, I have to know a couple of things about this. Number one, were you there during the Super Bowl or only before? And number two, was Travis there? And if so, how much did he actually drink?
No, Travis was not there, sadly. I'm going to try and visit him in March. He's got some big to-dos going on in early March. But yes, Travis was not there. I was with some friends. We were coming back from kind of a wilderness voyage out in Nelson County, which is kind of right in the middle of nowhere in Virginia. And so we were traveling back on the road, and we saw, you know, there's a ton of breweries and wineries and distilleries and cideries kind of along this stretch south of like Charlottesville, Virginia. There's a little ski area and stuff there, but and it's kind of popped up all around that area. And so we saw this, let's go and take a tour. And it was awesome. Great whiskey. I would say they make whiskey because they're not doing it in the American bourbon style, but they can't call it whiskey because, like, you know, Irish whiskey or Scotch whiskey, because they're not in those places. So yeah, so we went and toured this place. The guy, and like, I think I've, you know, had these moments in my life where I'm like, boy, it would be really great to open a distillery or a brewery. I'm sure, you know, everybody has these thoughts from time to time. And you go on the tour, and the guy who started this this distillery, he's now deceased, but he was the inventor of caller ID. So wow. So he had some money to build this amazing, you know, massive multi-million-dollar operation. And you know, it gives you a little bit of perspective on, okay, so this was like a fun thing for him. Got it, right? He just, you know, could have essentially thrown away millions of dollars, but it seems like it's working. And Virginia Distillery's whiskey's pretty darn good, I will say, but you know, you got to get back on the road and get back home for the Super Bowl. So yes, that was pre-Super Bowl, on the way home from a kind of a guy's weekends out in the mountains, which is fun.
What's going through my mind now as you're talking about starting a brewery was the Drew Carey Show. I don't know if you ever used to watch it, Brian, but they started their own brewery and they called it Buzz Beer, and it was coffee flavored beer, and the slogan was "Stay up and get drunk all over again."
See, now had that, you know, 20 years later, like that would be, you know, like a Beer Advocate, you know, 93 point, you know, beer that everybody's, you know, checking in on Untappd or whatever. But you know, sadly, too early. You know, 20 years before his time, Drew Carey and the Buzz Beer Corporation. Sad times.
If nothing else, Brian, I think Travis definitely would have stocked up on that beer in his restaurants.
Yes, I think so. Yeah, I think he likes the idea of, like, you know, Four Loko, you know, like this kind of like crazy up or downer nonsense. And so I could see him finding a way to infuse that into some of his some of his offerings for his patrons. But yeah, next time I go to a distillery, it will certainly be with Travis, because that man knows a thing or two about whiskey, as I've learned over the years.
Travis certainly does know his whiskey. Whiskey may not be great for your health, but Omax Health is, because Omax Health is all about making you feel better. If you're living with chronic pain, you know how terrible it is. Constant discomfort, it can keep you from exercising, sleeping, or even eating. So if you're dealing with chronic muscle and joint pain, then make sure you try the natural breakthrough pain relief solution, CryoFree CBD Roll-On, developed by Omax Health. It's non-prescription, it's an easy roll-on, it's 100% natural, and it works within 10 minutes. And here's the best part. As a listener of Play Like a Jet, you get a 20% off discount on a full bottle of CryoFree CBD Pain Relief Roll-On and free shipping. Discount also applies towards any product site-wide. Just go to omaxhealth.com today and enter promo code OVERTIME. That's Omax Health, omaxhealth.com, promo code OVERTIME, and you'll get yourself 20% off CryoFreeze and anything site-wide. And while you certainly want to keep your body healthy, you definitely want to keep your home healthy, and that's why you want to go to Simply Safe. Every night, local police departments across America receive hundreds of calls from burglar alarms. The vast majority of the time, they have no idea whether the alarm's real. Is there really a crime going on or not? All the alarm company can tell them is that the motion sensor went off. But Simply Safe gives you a much higher level of home security. If there's a break-in, Simply Safe uses real video evidence to give police an eyewitness account of the crime. That means police dispatch up to 350% faster than for a normal burglar alarm. You get comprehensive protection for your entire home, 24/7 monitoring by live security professionals. And it's only 50 cents a day with no contracts. Visit simplysafe.com/overtime and you'll get free shipping and a 60-day risk-free trial. You've got nothing to lose. Go now and be sure you go to simplysafe.com/overtime so they know Play Like a Jet sent you. That's simplysafe.com/overtime. And with that said, Brian, we've now touched on Adam Carolla, breweries, Drew Carey. So I guess it's time we talk about the Jets a little bit.
Fine. Yeah, that's always the fun thing on our podcast when we do it. And we need to kind of, you know, now that we're kind of dead in the off season, get back and do some more stuff coming up soon. But it's always fun to be like, okay, how far afield can we get? And how many listeners are going to leave before we get to the stuff that they actually want, or, you know, to make them hit the forward 30 button, you know, six times before you know, we stop talking about the Golden Girls or whatever. So
I could do an entire Golden Girls podcast, but I'll spare everybody from that. And instead, I'll ask you about Greg Williams to start, because I know that going into the season, you were very negative on Greg Williams.
Yes.
You didn't want the Jets to hire him. And in fact, I believe as recently as midway through the 2019 season, you were still calling for him to be fired. Have you changed your tune? Do you think that Greg Williams is a little bit better than you gave him credit for? And what do you think about him going forward? Are you confident in his ability to lead the Jets defense now, certainly more so than you were before the season started?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's fair to say that, you know, wisdom is acquired, you know, failures over time. But what I will say is I'm still not on board. I certainly have my doubts. But when I look at the larger picture of that coaching staff, what I do see is he seems to be one of the most competent coaches on that staff. So while that might not be, you know, a super high bar as a measurement, you know, when I kind of look around and look at what else I see and look at, you know, maybe what Adam Gase did with his offense in his first year, I say, well, I see guys who, you know, like Jamal Adams and others who have rallied around this person. I see decent results. You know, granted, they had a number of injuries, you know, at the very start of the season, CJ Mosley and, you know, and others that certainly flavored, and then just, you know, the rough cornerback play, you know, but ultimately, you know, resulting in some positives there. But, you know, so I see those things and I have to kind of hold them in balance and say, okay, I'm willing to stay my hand on the execution of this guy, but it doesn't mean that I'm commuting this sentence on Greg Williams. I'm willing to see more, and see more evidence before I, you know, right, we kind of you know, commute that sentence or execute that sentence. Is that fair?
I think that's more than fair. I think you are somebody who has not necessarily completely done a 180 on his opinion, but you're willing to give him the opportunity to make you do a 180. Right now, maybe you've done about 45-degree turn. You're part of the way there. You're part of the way there, but you're not quite at the 180 yet. And I have a feeling that you're not quite at the 180 spot yet with Adam Gase either.
No.
I know you weren't happy with him when he was hired. Many of us weren't. Have your feelings changed at all, or have they actually been strengthened by what you saw in 2019?
I would say not at all. I think I want him to disprove me. Now, certainly did the Jets go on a run at the end of last season, and people can look at the record and say, you know, well, you know, results matter. I say yes, but like, let's look at who those results were over. Certainly they played well in some games that people did not expect them to play well in. I think the Cowboys game, even the Steelers game, you know, there were games where they, you know, they acquitted themselves well, but on the whole, this is a person who was brought in to reinvigorate the defense with a young quarterback, and his role was essentially to focus on that side of the ball. By all accounts that you've seen, that I've seen, that we've read, he basically does not pay attention at all to the defense. So when I think about where he's putting his emphasis of his time and his focus, if I'm not seeing the results on the field, then I have to wonder, you know, whether he's doing a good job or not. And at this point, I can't see that he's doing a good job. And I think, as you know, we've talked about and others talk about repeatedly, we knew by the end of last season, you knew and I knew and every fan who watched the Jets games last year knew that Sam Darnold was great because they had a terrible offensive line. So if you kind of rolled him out, he was going to get himself in better situations. Well, I understand that there was the issue with the, with the health. You know, he had, kissing disease. Can't think of it.
Mono.
He had mono. And so that certainly, you know, cut a chunk out of the beginning of the season. But even before that, and even after that, we saw them pushing, from a scheme perspective, they kept him in the pocket. They weren't designing plays to roll him out. Had they just watched tape from last year, they would have seen the success in which he did that. And while they learned it, it wasn't until, I don't know, week 10 or something like that, that the offense figured that out. And so if Adam Gase is this amazing offensive genius, why didn't he watch last year's tape? Or in watching last year's tape, why didn't he internalize that and bring that into the offense? And so that's one small example, but it's a microcosm of what I see of larger issues with his coaching. And so, again, one example, but I think it encapsulates well many of the problems that people have and have seen with him over time. Now, does a good offensive line help that? I think so. But, you know, misuse of Le'Veon Bell, like, we can go on and on, right? I mean, what did you think of what you saw from him?
Didn't want them to hire him in the first place, and
right,
he did nothing to change that opinion. In fact, he strengthened my resolve because I saw all the problems that I knew about from Miami. They were on full display, and it was very clear that he hadn't learned anything. And I think that was my biggest concern, was that because he had been fired and rehired right away, he wasn't going to reflect for whatever anybody wants to say about Mike McCarthy.
Yeah.
And we'll see if this actually ends up being legit, but he did do a whole apology tour talking about how he had hired this team to bring him into the new age and how he had learned and how he was going to do things differently when he got his second chance. And so that 1 year off at the very least made him think about it. Whether or not he ends up delivering on all that, we'll see. But with Gase, he had no reason to think he did anything wrong. And as we could tell, he proceeded as if he does everything perfectly. And anybody that can't conform to what he wants to do is just a loser or a bum or whatever it is he thinks internally about these guys. And we saw this with Le'Veon Bell, like you said, people talk about, but he got so many touches. Yeah, but it's not the amount of touches he got. It's the way he was used, and that was always the problem. If Le'Veon Bell's having trouble running behind this offensive line, we know that he can go out and be essentially an extra wide receiver, and you can line him up against linebackers where he'll have a mismatch. Why wasn't more of that done? You could go through a variety of different ways in which Le'Veon Bell was misused. And then, of course, there was the lack of adjustment and the fact that you now have multiple players who have spoken either very clearly about Gase or with cryptic messages about Gase, either on social media or some other form of public communication. And all of those things are the things that I was nervous about when he left Miami and came here. And he's done nothing to calm those fears. And like I said, if anything, he's made me even more nervous about the future, because now, Brian, we go into year number three of Sam Darnold. And the refrain has been, this guy is great with offense. He's great with quarterbacks. He can take Sam Darnold to the next level. And I know that there's a lot of excuses in terms of injuries and the offensive line. And it was his first year in the system, Sam Darnold. But he didn't make that leap that we were all hoping for in year two. Now, that's not to say he didn't improve. I think he improved, and he improved a fair amount. But he definitely didn't improve to the level that we were hoping for. People were hoping that he was going to go from very up and down rookie to excellent second year quarterback. I think in his second year, he went from very up and down rookie to slightly less up and down second year guy. And we saw plenty of flashes. We saw the talent on full display many, many times. And he had some really strong games, but it was a roller coaster ride, a little less so than his rookie year, but still a roller coaster ride. What did you think about Sam Darnold year number two? And what do you think needs to happen for him to make that leap in year number three?
Yeah, I think he had an okay year, kind of as you said, right? It was not impressive. It was not horrific, right? It was probably below average, right? But not horrendous, right? that's not great praise. But to say all that to say, I really love Sam Darnold. Mm-hmm. I think he's a great player. He is, you know, not even 23 years old, about to enter his third season in the league. You know, he certainly does not have all the physical, you know, skills that you might see with other players, you know, like Lamar Jackson or Patrick Mahomes, or, you know, other players in the league, even Josh Allen. But I do think he has that kind of quintessential pocket passer quarterback. You know, is he going to be the next Brett Favre or Aaron Rodgers or, you know, someone in that vein? I don't think so. I think that's, you know, that's certainly a high bar to put on somebody, but could he be a very serviceable quarterback for the next 10 years that you can kind of build around and improve on, you know, maybe Matt Stafford, or, you know, I'd say he's above Matt Stafford, but I don't know that he's proven to us that he's Aaron Rodgers yet either. So there's somewhere in between there where I think he's going to land, you know, at the end of his time. But right, I think there was lots of questions in terms of, you know, the time he had to throw the ball, in terms of, you know, the types of plays they were running, in terms of the receivers, you know, he had at his disposal. So to kind of answer your question about, you know, what does he need going into the next year, I would hope that continuity, incorporating the things that they learned about what he does well. Like, if we go back to week one next year and they're not rolling him out, you know, because, I don't know, they've made improvements to the offensive line or whatever, like, that's a mistake. Let this guy do things that he does well. Let him throw on a mobile platform. He seems to be equipped to do that, and, you know, can kind of riff on plays very well. So let's give him those opportunities. But that's number one. So I think, you know, continuity in the scheme hopefully will help and kind of continue to improve that and take his kind of elements and the elements of what the offense has. They certainly need to address that offensive line. I don't know that they – I think all five of those positions are upgradable, I don't think you need to upgrade all five, you know, through free agency and draft. But I certainly think you better address at least – two to three, you know, very clearly and very distinctly with kind of top level talent. And then, you know, thirdly, you know, the weapons at his disposal. If if Le'Veon Bell, you know, is not the right person for Adam Gase's scheme. I'm not saying we need to throw him out and, you know, get a, you know, draft a running back high. That's not what I'm saying at all. But I certainly think they need to find players that are going to complement that system and they can use and use, you know, kind of deeply in the system. And I think, but I think the most important place to look for that is, you know, is around wide receiver. Robbie Anderson is more than likely going to be gone. You know, he's looking, this is his chance for a payday. I do not begrudge him wanting to get top dollar for, you know, for what he can offer to a team, and whether that's Oakland or Arizona or, you know, I don't know, some team, you know, that that's kind of looking for a deep threat to open up their offense. Like I certainly think he could provide a lot of value to another team and make top dollar for it. So I'm not going to begrudge him leaving, but I certainly think it's an opportunity to bring some other players back. So I don't know exactly who, but like one guy that I think, you know, had a very unfortunate season was, you know, with the Colts last year was Devin Funchess. Like he's not necessarily a great, highly productive player, but he has that kind of big body, you know, prototypical X, almost a tight end style body, can play great in the red zone, you know, would complement someone like Jameson Crowder pretty well. And he obviously had a really bad year. And, you know, Andrew Luck's not coming back, so he's not going to get the opportunity to do another one-year deal in Indianapolis and make a ton of money. So he's looking for a payday, and the Jets have money. So I, like a player like that, I would be very interested in kind of signing on a bargain deal and see what you can get from them. And then, yeah, find some opportunities for players, wide receivers through the draft. So again, continuity, offensive line, more targets as wide receivers.
I know you're saying you want continuity, but the coaching staff, I'm not so sure you want continuity there after the team was 32nd in
offense. I mean, continuity of scheme, right? Like, let's not go back to ground, you know, to square one if they've, you know, figured out things that seem to work well for him at the end of last year. That's all I'm saying. I mean, we're going to have continuity. No one's going to fire Adam Gase now. So at least continuity in the scheme.
Right. That's where I was going with this, because I understood what you meant, and I wanted to flesh that out a little bit, because yes, you want continuity in scheme, and as you said, Gase isn't going anywhere, but that doesn't necessarily mean you have to have continuity all the way around. Are you concerned that after the team was 32nd in offense that they haven't made any changes to the coaching staff whatsoever?
No, because it was their first year, right? And I think they get the opportunity to, you know, to put the sins on the people that got them to that place, right? The coaches who had, you know, brought in the players who were there prior to there, the GM who basically did nothing to address the offensive line during his entire tenure, you know, nothing long-term sustaining, you know, for the offensive line. So I think they're allowed to say, but like, look at what you gave us. Like, look at what we started with. And while I'm very much a believer in, you know, it's the poor craftsman who blames his tools, they get that opportunity this year, but they certainly will not get that opportunity next year. And so I just think this is very typical, you know, NFL and kind of ownership patterns. And so I'm not surprised that they weren't addressed, and in addressing it, it only confirms the fact that they felt like, you know, it was something they could control, right? Like when they don't address it, the signal is it was out of their control. They couldn't control it because of the players that the team had. If they start addressing it, like, you know, other coaches who are kind of firing off everybody, you know, because they know it's going to get them one more year, you know, that's like, well, you know, it's they're finding scapegoats and trying to signal to everyone like, hey, it's not me. It's these terrible coaches that I hired and brought in. Right. Like, you know, it's just a clear, you know, misdirection. Right. It's just classic misdirection. So I'm not surprised. No.
Where are you at with Joe Douglas? How optimistic are you?
I think I'm only great question. I don't know, because right, we've only had a very few transactions that he's actually made. So I always love to watch the moves that, you know, that they'll make, and look for some bellwether moves or not moves that he's going to make. And I don't think we've really had a chance to see them yet. So I'm withholding judgment. I am optimistic because he comes from, some good, pedigree in terms of, where he's scouted, where he's been part of, good, at least positive, coaching, GM and kind of personnel situations. But right at the end of the day, John Idzik came from Seattle. How'd that work out? Mike Maccagnan came from Houston, who had been on a run of, finding some incredibly talented players. How did that work out? So ultimately, now that he's in the big seat, what tools is he going to use? What levers is he going to pull? And as best I can tell, he seems pretty classically, film grinder, scout type person. I don't know where he is around analytics. We're starting to see analytics and kind of, analytics groups pop up within larger football organizations. As best I can tell, maybe tell me if I'm wrong, but as best I can tell, that still does not really exist, or they haven't kind of made that into a kind of a team. Like, if you remember Scott Cohen, who used to be with the Jets and, had been with the Eagles prior to that, I believe he's now, I'm not sure where he is. I can't remember. I'm looking it up, but I know he's like the head of an analytics team. Ravens. He's with the Ravens. Sorry. So he's on the staff at the Ravens, and his title is director of football research. And that's a fancy term for applying analytics to the coaching staff, and personnel department. So I want to know what he's doing in the way of analytics. That's a big thing for me. And then also, what kind of players does he start to bring in? And kind of, as I've already alluded to, I don't want them to bring in the Kelvin Beecham type players. Like, I want them to go out and bring in some high level, high dollar type talent at whether it's cornerback or whether it's offensive line, wide receiver, maybe not so much. I certainly would like them to bring in some more players there. But really, they need to spend their money and go all in on players and get into an arms race with, other teams for, with the Titans for a player like Jack Conklin, or with the Redskins for a player like Brandon Scherff. Now, obviously, a lot of these things have yet to be determined. We haven't, assigned franchise tags. Some of these guys might get snapped up. But there's tons of players out there that the Jets, if they just – they've got $50 million. They could go well higher than that if they want to. I think upwards of 80. The Dolphins currently have the most with $90 million in salary cap. So they're going to have to compete. And there's, the cap is so big now, and those rookie contracts are so small comparatively. If they want to bring in players and they want to improve this offense, they have to overpay. That's just what they're going to have to do. So if he understands that and goes into that process knowing, hey, this is a tool to a larger end rather than Maccagnan, is this the right move? I don't know. I really want Matt Paradis, but I don't know if I should pay this person. And then, that guy's gone, right? You can't afford that. You need to go in strong. You need to go in early. I'm not saying tamper, but tamper. That's what I'm saying.
Play like a Jet. Play like a Jet.
Let's talk about some of the players that Joe Douglas could sign, and we'll start with the guys that are already on the team. Kelvin Beecham is one of the internal free agents. I'm going to assume that you're not big on bringing him back, but there are a couple of others as well. Jordan Jenkins, Brian Poole, Robbie Anderson, those are the big names. And there are a lot of others because the Jets are at the top of the league list in number of unrestricted free agents on their roster. So talk to me a little bit about who you'd like to see come back, who you'd like to see go, and what you think Joe Douglas is going to do to address the internal free agents.
Yeah, I mean, I think specifically around, guys that they should cut, I know the dead money's insane, but you just might as well get rid of Tremaine Johnson at this point. He's not doing anything to help the organization. Just say goodbye to him. I think there's a lot of talk about Avery Williamson. I think he's been a pretty talented player. He's got a pretty big cap number. So I'd say start to address You know, if you need to, you know, find a way to, you know, turn something into a bonus or whatever, do that. Brian Winters is definitely gone. Daryl Roberts should be gone. You know, these are all ways that you can kind of quickly start to pick up, you know, some dollars. But then, you know, to your question around, you know, who do you, you know, who do you keep? You know, I think that's, yeah, that's great. And so, you know, Khalil, you know, he shouldn't, I don't think he'll be back. I don't expect he'd be back. He played 34% of the team's snaps. He's 35 years old. Kelvin Beachum's 31. You know, he averaged $8 million, you know, on his contract last year. He was a good player, but he's a left tackle. You've got an early draft pick. Everybody's going to be, you know, running for skill position players. Go get yourself, you know, the next DeBrickashaw Ferguson. Like, just make this easy on us all. So I don't think you should bring back Kelvin Beachum unless it's on like a vet men deal, and you don't have to do that at the start of free agency. Robbie Anderson, you mentioned, this is his chance for a payday. And while I like him, he's not a prototypical alpha receiver. He's a great deep threat stretch player, but I don't know that you can afford to pay that guy whatever it's going to take, $14 million a year. Like, that's just money. That's throwing, you know, good money after bad at a position where you it hasn't worked. And he's 27 years old. He's already kind of reached his age apex. It's all downhill for Robbie Anderson. Brian Poole, sure, on a, you know, on a small deal, that's fine. You know, other players kind of in the mix there. I mean, I don't know. Like, at that point, it's, you know, the kind of Jordan Jenkins you mentioned, that would be interesting, right? He played half the team snaps. He's 26 years old. I'm curious to know what he's going to want. I think that's going to be a, let him go out to the market and see what he can get. And then if you want to match it, great. But, you know, at the end of the day, I don't know whether he's someone you want to have to overpay for when you have so many needs elsewhere in your organization. What do you think? Any players you really want to resign or you really don't want to see back?
I would like to see Robbie Anderson back, but I've shifted my thoughts on this a little bit, only in the sense that if it comes down to signing Robbie Anderson or being able to get somebody like Yannick Ngakoue, who we'll talk about in a second, or Jack Conklin, if that becomes a binary choice, then I think with this draft being so deep at wide receiver, you could go out and maybe get somebody like Albert Wilson, who was one of Adam Gase's favorites when he was in Miami, bring him in here as the placeholder type, maybe draft two wide receivers in the third and fourth round the way the Jets did a couple of years ago, except this time you don't draft Ardarius Stewart and Chad Hansen. You draft guys that are actually good, and then maybe you do that.
Analytics would help with that.
My preference would be to keep Anderson, but I think you've got to keep in mind the reasonableness of the contract. I would probably transition tag him, because then worst case scenario, you have him on a 1 year, $15 million deal, but we'll see what they end up doing. I'd like to see Poole back. I think he was excellent in the slot. That's the one more than any other that they really need to work out. And beyond that, I don't really have strong feelings. If Beachum comes back on a reasonable 1 year contract, that's fine. I don't think he's going to come back, especially when you look at what he said during the playoffs, which seemed to be a direct shot at Adam Gase. And then you take a look at Jordan Jenkins, and he's a solid player, as you would call him, Brian, a try-hard. He's not an elite athlete, and he's not a guy that is necessarily going to be a 10, 11, 12 sack guy. Not that sacks are the be-all, end-all, but you get what I'm saying. And I think that if Greg Williams decides that he wants to shift to a more base 4-3, he becomes a lot less useful. So that'll be something worth keeping an eye on. I wouldn't be against any of those guys coming back, but I don't think that it's anything that anybody should get super concerned about if, say, Jordan Jenkins and Kelvin Beachum don't come back. A little more concerned, obviously, if Robbie Anderson and Brian Poole don't come back, because then the question becomes, how do you replace them? And, Brian, that brings us to external free agents, because part of this is going to be deciding who the Jets should keep, and part of it is going to be deciding who they should go out and get. Now, you mentioned some names. You mentioned Conklin. You mentioned Scherf. You mentioned Devin Funchess. Who are some of the targets, and what are some of the positions that you think Joe Douglas should really put a premium on this offseason in free agency?
Yeah, I think the two highest value things for me are cornerback and offensive line. So like losing a Jordan Jenkins, while that would certainly be, you know, a bummer, at the same time, like, you know, we need help in that secondary. Certainly, you know, we found some play last year, that was, you know, surprising at the cornerback position. But specifically, yeah, they need to go out and find some players. I think the turmoil, or so starting with cornerback, I think, you know, the turmoil in Dallas makes for a great opportunity for a player like Byron Jones, who I think is around 25, 26 years old. You know, he's a big cornerback at like about 6'1", but 200 pounds. He's great at man coverage. He can also play tight ends. So, you know, he would be a very versatile player that I think would pair well with, you know, with someone like Jamal Adams on back end, and the rest of that group. So, you know, he would be someone that I talk about overpaying. Yeah. Like, he's the kind of guy that I certainly would be interested in. I think also, you know, maybe to a lesser degree, you know, so someone, if you're looking to find some, kind of a hold the fort cornerback, you know, Chris Harris, you know, I think, you know, the Broncos did not know how to use him properly, but he's 31 years old, or will be this year, but he is a shutdown cornerback. You know, we need more of that. I certainly don't think you have to kind of overpay for that. But, you know, that's the kind of player, you know, that I'm looking for, from cornerback position. As far as offensive line, right, I've mentioned a couple guys already, you know, Conklin or Scherf or, you mentioned Ngakoue on the, in disrupting front, like he would be interested. I'm curious what you have to say about that. But on offensive line, I think Conklin is certainly one. Costanzo is another. Sorry, I had a list somewhere. I was trying to look it up. I couldn't find it. Like even Thuney coming off the Pats, like he certainly, you know, the Pats had a bad year comparatively, but I think you're going to pay a little bit of a premium for someone like him. But any uncertainty around Tom Brady is, you know, a benefit to other players on that team that, you know, they might be waiting on figuring out how to play. And so, you know, while, you know, they've had guys come off that offensive line in the past that maybe people have overpaid for, I don't think that's the case, you know, with him specifically. So I would definitely be interested in him. You know, certainly Bulaga's getting old in the tooth, but, you know, another kind of hold the fort player that you could add. So, I mean, I think there's a ton of players out there that this team could look at both kind of cornerback and offensive line position. But yeah, and then I would say focus on those two areas and then fill in the rest, you know, whether it's wide receiver or linebacker or some of the other places. But, you know, I think that's the thing. Like they're going to go to free agency, and I hope that they're not going to be reactive, that they're going to be proactive in terms of the players that they want to bring onto this team. And then you go back around and you kind of feather back in for your long-term plan through the draft. So yeah, I don't know. What do you think? Are you on board with kind of cornerback and offensive line, or do you have other positions that you'd want to prioritize over those two?
I think one thing that the Jets have had trouble doing over the last bunch of years, and I talked to my friend Chris Walker about this, and he fleshed this idea out, and the more that we talked about it, the more that I realized that it's 100% true. You have to approach the offseason looking at what the strength of free agency is and what the strength of the draft is. So in other words, you look at it and you say, okay, here's the free agent class. Where is it deep? Where is it shallow? Here's the draft. Where is it deep? Where is it shallow? And then you figure out, okay, if I fill this need in free agency because it's deep, then I can fill this other need in the draft because it's deep in the draft. So if you look at free agency, I think that it's very deep at edge rusher, which is a welcome change because that almost never happens. You have Ngakoue, you have Shaq Barrett could be free. but Dupree's a possibility. Dante Fowler. There's a bunch of guys that are legitimate.
Beasley. Beasley's another one. You're right.
Mm-hmm. There's a bunch of them that are available that I think you could potentially get. And then you look in the draft, and it's not great there. Wide receiver. Amari Cooper may shake free, I suppose, but you look at the draft, and it's loaded. So do you want to spend $20 million on a wide receiver when the draft is loaded with wide receivers? So for me,
when you can get someone in the fourth or fifth round who are going to be, you know, starters, you know.
Yeah, and this is not to say that I would be upset if they got Amari Cooper. Of course I wouldn't, but I'm just saying you have to look at how to allocate resources. And my thought on this, and I know a lot of people won't agree, is that if you have the opportunity to get somebody like Yannick Ngakoue, who's a top 10 to 15 edge rusher in the league and 24 years old, you go ahead and you make that move above anything else, because even though the offensive line is in theory more important, edge rusher is extremely important as well, as we saw over the course of the playoffs. We saw what Nick Bosa and Dee Ford and those guys could do, especially when you combine it with a really strong interior defensive line, which the Jets seem to have built, or at least they're in the process of really coming into their own, especially if Quinnen Williams makes the jump in year number two. And so you look at that, and then you look at the fact that in the draft, it's loaded with wide receivers and there's a lot of really good offensive linemen. I think that if you were to, say, get Ngakoue and somebody like Thuney, who's not going to cost you quite as much as Scherf or Conklin or one of those guys,
right? Yeah,
you could go into the draft and say, okay, we've got Thuney, that helps. Maybe you sign one other guy who's a slightly lower level veteran at tackle or guard, and then you go into the draft and you attack wide receiver and you attack offensive line almost exclusively in the draft, because now you've taken care of the edge rusher problem. Corner's another one. I would like to see them get a new corner. Byron Jones, I wouldn't be upset about, but maybe I would look for somebody that's going to cost a little bit less and at least be a competent corner.
James Bradbury from the Panthers. He's like 26-ish, you know, big, another big guy, 6'11", 211, you know, fast, you know, has matched up well, you know, played well in Carolina. What do you think about someone like him?
Yeah, if they get him for a reasonable price, I'd certainly consider that. You could explore the trade market too. But I think what San Francisco really showed you is that if you have an elite front that can get to the quarterback, it's not quite as important to have shutdown-ish corners. And I think the Jets had the reverse formula going on in 2009, 2010. They didn't really have a great pass rush, but they had Revis back there, so they knew that they could get away with it. I think if you have a front that can get to the quarterback reliably and regularly, it becomes a little less important to have great corners. You can get by with solid corners.
I'm going to disagree only because I think what we've seen with what San Francisco has done and what with the Titans just did, you know, great defenses, you know, kind of some smash mouth style. I mean, no disrespect to what AJ Brown and Deebo Samuel just did for those two teams. But you know, they have kind of taken on this, you know, running approach to winning, running and defense approach, which is, you know, old school. But what's going to now happen? This is what always happens in the NFL. People are going to see those teams. They're going to see a team like the Titans. They're going to see Derrick Henry. They're going to see the offensive line. They see those things. They're going to go, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. We need to run the ball, and we need to play, you know, stout defense against the run. And like every measure shows that over time, yes, you can run the ball. And hey, I mean the Titans, you know, impose their will on many other teams, but over time, it's still less efficient than throwing the ball. Excuse me. Running is always going to be less efficient in modern NFL than throwing the ball. What I'm saying is I think people are going to over-invest. There's going to be market overcorrection in terms of drafting, in terms of paying those kind of people. And where the efficiency is in kind of defending. I'm not saying you're saying don't do that at all. I'm just saying I think it presents an opportunity for the Jets if they're smart enough to see it. Get back to your point about Joe Douglas. Is Joe Douglas smart enough to see the opportunity for inefficiency in buying places where other teams will start to copycat what the Titans did and what the Niners did? I don't know.
Oh, I don't disagree with anything you just said. I just think that the way to stop the pass can be to have blanket cover guys, or it could be to have
a guy like Bosa is going to make a material impact if you don't have Revis. Yeah, that's a great point.
That's what I'm saying. So I think that if you have guys that can get
how have the Jets done at finding a Nick Bosa type player though?
Well, that's the point. There's a Nick Bosa type player sitting right there in free agency in Yannick Ngakoue. So that's why I'm
right,
saying.
Right, that's true. That's a great point. That's a great point.
Already a proven commodity at 24 years old instead of having to go into the draft. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So a lot of people want to spend all this money on offense. I've heard people say, gotta spend on offense, gotta spend on offense. I'm fine with going out and spending the most money of all the guys they're going to sign on somebody like Ngakoue to fix that edge problem, because I think a lot of people will go back and say they shouldn't have picked interior defensive line. They made a mistake picking Quinton Williams. But if you look at the 49ers as an example, the reason why that pass rush is so successful isn't just because of Bosa. A big part of why Bosa can do what he does is because if you look up front and you see what DeForest Buckner and Armstead are doing up there, and you combine it with Bosa and Dee Ford, now you've got a formula for terrorizing quarterbacks. So the Jets have that interior defensive line that looks like it's coming into zone. If Quinton Williams really makes that jump in year number two, we already saw Foley Fadakasi, Nathan Shepard, Kyle Phillips. We know that Henry Anderson is at least solid. Steve McClendon is good. So they've got that part of it. Now they need to add the edge rushers. So if you add Ngakoue there, I think you can really turn this defense into something nasty, especially if you have the return of Avery Williamson and CJ Mosley to the inside linebacker positions. So that's what I would be looking at, because then when you look at the draft, Brian, which is the last thing I wanted to ask you about, you go in there with a general strategy. Now, we can't really get into the weeds on exactly who they should pick where, because it's way too early to know who's going to be available or what guy's stock is going to look like before and after the combine and things like that. But I wanted to know what you think in terms of general draft strategy. Are there positions specifically that you would be targeting above all else? Are there any players in particular that you like in certain ranges? So let's say there's a guy you like that might go like second to fourth round, like as a general idea. Oh, here's a guy that I might think the Jets should be interested in. And then in terms of overall philosophy, are you a best player available guy? Are you draft for need guy? Are you somewhere in between? What do you think about all of that?
Well, I mean, yeah, to start there, best player or, you know, or need, like, I think, I don't know. I've been in both places with the team, and I think best player available is, you know, common sense would say that's always the best thing to do. But I think the Jets and kind of their drafting of best player available defensive linemen over the last decade has kind of, maybe tried my, my philosophy in terms of how I actually, you know, go into the world. So what I would say is I think best player available is great when you have the luxury of a team that's stacked. Best player available is more fraught with peril when you don't have a team that's stacked, right? And so I'm not saying that you never do best player available or you only do best player available when you're on this team that's like, you know, I don't know, like the Seahawks Legion of Boom era team, right? Like you need to be flexible in your strategy and kind of watch what's happening around you. But just because a player is, you know, really high on your board or maybe, you know, your next player, like if it does not address a position, like clearly, okay. So for instance, if the Jets pick 10 and Tua or someone is still on the board, but they think Tua is a great player, they give him a better grade than some offensive lineman, like, are they going to pick Tua? No, they're not going to pick Tua because they have their quarterback. So like, it's insane to say, oh, like you only draft best player available. Like that, it just doesn't play out when you watch teams draft as quarterbacks are available when they have a quarterback. So that, I think it's kind of a joke when people, you know, just say, oh, you only do that. Versus, you know, need the Jets, you know, when we get to kind of the needs of what the Jets need, I think we've talked about it, right? They need help on offense. They need help specifically on the offensive line. They need tons of help in the offensive line. I think you could literally just draft offensive line players and I would not be disappointed with you because they have so much need in that area across that whole group. But do they have other needs? Absolutely. Cornerback is one. Wide receiver is another one. You want someone that you're going to pair with Sam Darnold if Sam Darnold is going to be the franchise player for your team. All those players, unfortunately, offensive line, cornerback, and wide receiver, you don't get good first year. Like, you don't get the height of their value in the first year. A running back, an Ezekiel Elliott, a Josh Jacobs, you know, kind of list goes on. Those players can come in and Saquon Barkley can immediately impact a team from a production standpoint. But the question is that the kind of impact you need from a long-term, you know, long-term viewpoint? And so what I would say is, you know, when it comes to what the Jets need to do, I like what your friend said. You look at where free agency is strong and you act accordingly. You look at where the draft is strong and you act accordingly. I don't know that the Jets have done that, right? Taken those strategies in the past where we know there's a ton of pass rushers. So let's in free agency. So let's get someone who's decent, not maybe the top guy, but decent. I don't think they've taken that approach. And I think that's only hurt them and made them get into a situation where taking best player available is not really, you know, available to them. So in terms of like who, I mean, I am terrible in terms of, you know, the who at this point. Like, I generally withhold most of my judgment until, you know, we get all the declarations. I think we're clear on that. You know, players get through the bowl process and then they go to, I want to see people go to the combine. I want to see how they test at the combine before I'm making any hard decisions or kind of like, oh, I'm really in love with this guy. You know, and so it's a little early for me. I would say follow back, like I'd be happy to follow back up once those things happen and once I can start to kind of, you know, get my brain around the players. But yeah, I would say in terms of where you're going to, you know, invest in certain players, I mean, I'm going to just sound like a, you know, broken record, but I would say offensive line and cornerback, you need probably at least two offensive linemen and I would love a corner in like the first three rounds. Like, I would love that. You know, if some amazing player, you know, CeeDee Lamb or something like that, you know, slips, like, okay, well, let's talk. But if, and then maybe because this class is so deep in terms of running backs and wide receivers, the guys that you're going to get in the fourth, fifth, sixth rounds at those positions, you know, last year, like if those guys came out a year early, you know, they might have, been a third rounder or a second rounder just by the nature of who the draft had last year. There were not that many talented wide receivers or running backs. Now, certainly we had some good results this year, but this class is so stacked in wide receiver and running back specifically, like I am happy to wait and take whatever value kind of, you know, pokes through. So I'm curious, like, who do you think kind of in that day three, day three land, like in terms of wide receivers and running backs, would you be interested in the Jets taking?
Man, it's so hard to know who's going to be available at that spot now because guys' stock is going to be so fluid in terms of how they do with the workouts and what they do with the combine and all that other stuff with the team interviews. Because remember, Jakai Polite is an example. I know a lot of people don't want to hear that name right now, but he was a guy that a lot of people thought could be a top 15 pick, and then he had the bad workouts, and all of a sudden it was like, oh, is he even going to get drafted? And then he ended up going in the third round. But with the wide receivers, there are a lot of really good wide receivers in this draft past first round range. One guy who stands out to me is that kid from Arizona State, and I keep forgetting how to say his name, but Brandon Ayuk, I think is how you pronounce it. Herm Edwards had him, so that's an easy phone call. Hey, Herm, what can you tell me about this kid? And then just sit back and listen to Herm explain about him for 15 minutes because that's what he's great at. And I think there are a lot of guys that are in that range that could go somewhere between 2 to 4, depending on how they do in these workouts and combines. And as far as cornerback, I don't think it's as deep of a draft, and I haven't really done a deep dive into who they should get. But I do like the idea of drafting somebody in that range, too, because I think there's always going to be players at positions in any draft that have the potential to at least be a decent starter. And the key to making your team successful over the long run is being able to occasionally get guys in rounds 5 through 7 that'll become a starter, but usually those are going to be role players. It's hitting on rounds 2 through 4 that's always going to determine whether or not you're a successful franchise or not, because once you hit on the first round pick, that's awesome. But remember, you have the salary cap, so you have to pay all these guys. But if you get a guy in, say, the third or fourth round that you now have cheaply for 4 years as a good or even solid starter, that's going to make all the difference in the world. So if they can get a starting cornerback, even a guy who's like an okay cornerback in, say, round four, that would make a ton of difference over the long haul. And I think this is where Joe Douglas is really going to earn his paycheck, is being able to do what guys like Tannenbaum and Idzik and Maccagnan were unable to do for almost the entirety of all of their tenures, which is to hit on players in those rounds and make up the lifeblood of the roster that way. Otherwise, you find yourself in a position where every single year we're looking at free agency with them having, as you said, potentially as much as $80 million to spend. And as much as that's nice, we both know, Brian, that generally, when you look at a team that consistently has a ton of money to spend, it's telling you that they're doing a poor job of drafting, because the teams that do a good job of drafting have to spend their money locking down their own players.
Yeah, and just to kind of go back over, I was curious and pulled up just Walter Football, just as a like, hey, just give me a litmus test on kind of where these guys are. So like in terms of the cornerback position, you get to prospect 7 before people are kind of projected out of the first round. Now, obviously, to your point, all this is going to change over time. You know, in terms of offensive tackles, you don't get players who are, you know, kind of being projected out of the first round until like the 8th pick. In terms of, you know, centers, you're getting out of the first round very quickly. You know, set like second, third player is there in that, like, you know, second, third round. And then, you know, kind of, you know, coming back to like guard, you know, similarly, you're not getting out of the first, or like similar to center, you're getting out of the first round very quickly. So like, if you're going to say to me, Brian, knowing almost nothing about, you know, the players, their individual merits or, you know, kind of lack thereof. And just knowing kind of where players are kind of projecting out, like, what pattern would you follow in the first 3 rounds? And I would say easy: offensive tackle, cornerback, guard, or center. And now you've gone through 3 rounds. You've gotten a cornerback, you know, who hopefully can slot in, is kind of at the top, near the top of the heap, maybe not the best, but, you know, could be a serviceable player. You've gotten 2 offensive line players. I would be remiss if I did not say that, you know, Travis is listening to this and screaming about the fact that we've come this far and not talked about center. So, you know, he believes the center is, you know, where it all begins. And you can kind of come away with, you know, one of, if not the first, but probably second best tackle in this draft. And then, right, you can kind of get a solid interior player. And those are guys who can, you know, be anchors for your line, kind of as we saw with Brick and Nick, you know, for a decade. So I would be very happy with that. I will say, a year ago, I basically, you know, begged for a similar strategy. It didn't happen. So I am, as a Jets fan, ready to be disappointed.
That should be on a bumper sticker. New York Jets, prepare to be disappointed. Brian Bassett, the host of There's Always Next Year here on Turn on the Jets Digital and the Play Like a Jet feed. Can't wait for you guys to put out another podcast, because I'm going through the withdrawals. I was saying to you before we started recording that I love the mixture, because you're the guy that's sort of the semi-straight man, and then you have Travis, who's the crazy out there outlaw, total wild card. I don't want to say alcoholic, but alcoholic adjacent, maybe. And then
adjacent.
And then you have Josh, who's the preacher man.
He's the brains of the operation and the face.
He's definitely the most, let's say, pulled back of the three of you, although he has his moments where he pulls his hair down too. So yeah. I'm looking forward to when you guys put another episode out. What's going on right now with the podcast? And as far as writing, I know you're doing some stuff for Bent Site Jets Fix. And how can people talk to you on social media too?
Yeah. Twitter, always there at Brian_Bassett. So please, you know, tweet at me, yell at me if you want. Yeah, I would say, as I said kind of earlier, I think the guys they've been pushing me to do a podcast. It's been a crazy first month of the year for work. But yes, it's time. It's time for us, you know, the Avengers, to assemble and have a podcast. So look for that soon. If not this week, definitely next week. We can kind of talk through this, all the future moves of the Jets. We can talk about the Golden Girls. We can talk about some yummy whiskey we've had, and we'll go from there.
Brian, as I always like to say to Travis, thank you for being a friend.
Down the road and back again. Thank you, my man.
Quick story for you, by the way, before we run. As far as the Golden Girls, there is a guy I used to work with, and he absolutely loved the Golden Girls. It was his favorite show. And so I used to look at him all the time at random, like when I was bored and needed to amuse myself. And I would say to him, and if you had a party and you invited everyone you knew, you would see that the biggest gift would be for me. And you know why? You do know why, don't you? It's because...
Heart attached would say.
Heart attached would say.
Now, when you started to say that, like, could he just not help himself for like breaking out into song?
No, he would just start laughing. And then we would both start laughing, and then we would jokingly hum the tune, because I think we both realized that the song sounds better if we're humming it rather than trying to sing it, because neither one of us could sing. So,
well, I think that's why it would sound so good, right? So, and the card attached would say, thank you for being a friend. Right? Just like that.
Exactly.
Terrible.
Perfect way to end the podcast. Brian, thanks for coming on. And don't forget, for the latest and greatest in New York Jets podcasts, you know where to go. That's Turn on the Jets Digital at turnonthejets.com.